Mayana, I've realized that the entire time we've been doing this podcast, I always refer to you as Ayana. Wait, your name is technically Ayana O'Neill, and Ayana with a with the ah at the end is like sort of like a hanging adjective. Is that is like,
The
am I wrong? Like, am I wrong? Do you just want to be called Ayana or like Ayana O'Neill?
Everyone calls me Ayana, so just stick with it. I'm
Okay.
used to it now, so don't
Actually,
change it, please.
I have a question. Isn't it actually Ayana with the stress on the A? I just realized that.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
That's why we do Ayana, because then it's a name.
Oh yes. That's great. You have your custom.
Technicalities.
All right, I'm gonna honesty moment. I don't know the stress on the word. Ayana.
Hi.
Okay, you are
Do we need a
Ayana
crash course in stress pattern and Navi? Okay.
now. No, there's no pattern to not be stressed. Like, there's nothing to learn.
Now,
Ayana
if you learn it right away, then the stress pattern is natural.
Maplus, I've been doing this wrong for 4 years. Do you think I'm gonna stop now?
Yes, of course. I have all the faith of Pandora in you.
I well angatikame mafrapo, and welcome to the Animokrik podcast. We got a couple of subjects, hopefully a light episode here, not a hour and a half epic, but we'll see what happens. We got some comic news, issue number 2 of The Next Shadow. We got some space news, a popular returning segment, I assume. And of course, Nafi practice at the end. Here with me is we've got the full cast. We have Ayana.
Kalt it.
We have Plumes,
Kalt it.
Awe,
Kalt it.
And Willem.
Kalt it.
And also me, Pomadic. So kicking it off, we're going to start with our discussion of issue number 2 of Avatar: The Next Shadow. Does anyone have any initial thoughts on this issue?
Norm! We saw Norm again.
Well, he was in the first one, but very briefly, right?
Oh, he was. I missed that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Only for
Okay,
one panel, I think, but.
Okay, okay.
One panel and a bit of dialogue. He was basically saying the same thing that both issues thus far have been saying entirely throughout, is that the relationship between the humans and some of the Na'vi is quite strained. And the relationship between the humans remaining on Pandora and continued survival therein is also strained.
Yeah, I hope he will get a at some point a story of his own without just explaining the plot or something or the background or something. Yeah, overall, I thought the overall looks and just the feel was I had a better feeling than in the first issue.
Yes. I felt like, as I sort of alluded to, I feel like a lot of the things that were shown and or told or explained in this second issue is kind of a continuation of the themes of the first, but I felt like this issue did a better job of showing rather than explaining.
Yeah, that's true. Oh
I
my
mean, it
God, is
sets
that
up a
all?
right.
I thought this episode sets up a nice cliffhanger for the next one. So now,
oh yeah,
I want to know what happens in the next one.
Oh yeah, the cliffhanger was much more effective here.
In general, I felt that like I mean, Jake being Jake again, right? I mean, just like he always is, just like, you know, we are going into it head first, maybe without thinking too much, which, yeah, I mean, I don't really relate
Yeah, it
to
was very true to his
myself.
character.
Yeah, but it is
That
true
is
to his
true.
character, indeed. But that's also why I don't really like Jake so much as a character, because he's like the opposite of me in that respect.
I can't identify with this headstrong paraplegic marine from the future.
I was just going to say, rewind 10 minutes ago, and you would. Yeah,
Funny enough,
I
I
mean,
might know
how
somebody.
long is it supposed to be? 2 weeks after the events of the movie, right? So we can't really expect that Jake has grown very much. So yeah, as you said, but Pavarotti is true to his character, I think.
I have a minor nit, and it kind of goes off of that cliffhanger bit. So at the end of every issue, they preview the cover art of the next issue, which... All right, so this the cover of this issue and the cover of the next issue suggest that the confrontation took place in this, like, heavily wooded area, or, like, almost similar to the scene of the challenge between Jake and Sute in Home Tree, which is obviously now destroyed at this point in time. But in all of the scenes of the actual fight, it's just in, like, some dirty valley. The cover art and the next issue are showing it as if it took place in this heavily wooded area, which it did not.
Continuity is a bit messed up.
It almost looks like it takes place in the Valley of the Tree of Souls, because if you look at the, like, next to last panel, you see one of the trees.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it is this highly ceremonious thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure, you know, Utral and Mokria have something to do with it.
What I was surprised by, I don't know why, but for some reason, I thought at the end of the last issue that Arvok would know about his parents' plans. But I don't know why I didn't register, because he wasn't there when... what's her name? His mother poisoned
Artsut.
Yeah, poisoned the knife. So when I read this, because I didn't read the first issue again, I was very surprised that by the end that he was himself very taken aback by the poisoned knife.
I was glad that we got to see a bit of something that has been alluded to for a very long time, that a lot of combat in among the Na'vi is very ritualized and, like, almost ceremonious in manner. Because the whole ceremonious challenge in the first film was a deleted scene. Like, we never actually got to... Most people never got to see that. But yeah, just being able to see Feiyo of some kind.
Feiyo? Mm-hmm.
Okay, we... yes.
All good. All good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. But yeah, that is true.
If this was a video show, we would have a counter going of every time Pominic misstresses a word. It'd be like a CinemaSins situation.
Ding. Or you have you mean a counter in the
in the
corner?
We can have a sound effect. Like, everyone gets their own sound effect.
Bling bling. All right. If I'm not mistaken, the dialogue that is set in the angular brackets is supposed to be spoken in Na'vi, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm very interested. I don't know what lens I'm reading this through, but every time I read those kind of dialogue, I say, can we actually say that in Na'vi? Is it possible to say in Na'vi?
Right.
Oh, what vocabulary are we supposed to get to translate this part of the comic?
Right.
So I'm not the only one.
Well, of course, there's always translating the meaning, not the words.
Of course,
again.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, there is quite specific, especially when Moat is introducing this whole fight. She she uses very, something that I can't do right now, very, what is it, elevated speech. Very, as you said, very formal and very ceremonialized wording. So for me, then, the idea and the question is, how would we actually translate this in Na'vi?
Mm-hmm.
Just to elaborate on the point you mentioned earlier, the stuff in brackets being in Na'vi, what is in brackets is a different language from the perspective of the primary perspective.
Yeah, okay.
Like, in Tsute's path, when Jake was saying stuff, it was in brackets. But saying stuff in English, it was in brackets. But conversation that happened in Na'vi was not in brackets.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I suppose otherwise they have to use too many brackets, right?
Well, then you'd have to have, like, different kinds of brackets for different languages. And
yeah,
it's just common comic vernacular to always go from the perspective of, like, the primary focus for any given scene. And Jake is the perspective in this case.
I did find the interaction with the injured Na'vi to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That was one of my favorite parts about this particular issue, is it shows like a building of trust in a sense. It shows how the humans that remained are almost trying to make reparations.
Yeah. I mean, they were well-intentioned to begin with. Like, whether, yeah, the story of Avatar and like humans in Avatar, at least among the scientists or whatever faction, seems to always be, we have very good intentions that sometimes don't always pan out. And that characterization is continued. I don't really have any complex thoughts on the matter, so I don't know why I opened my mouth.
Yeah, while I was reading that part of the comic, I mean, I get that. The whole conflict between the humans and the Na'vi, it's understandable, given what happened in the movie, right? I mean, the home was destroyed, and the precious home tree and everything, and I don't know how many people were injured or died during that attack, so it's a huge physical and emotional wound that the humans caused for the Omatikaya in particular. And now trying to mend these wounds to help them heal is good that the humans do it. It's understandable that they do it, mm-hmm. because they need to coexist. They need to find a way to live together on Pandora. And as I mean, they hope they can do it peacefully at least. So it was interesting to see, but I don't know. While I was reading it, I was just thinking like, okay, it's understandable and all, but come on, get over it. Like, it's only been 2 weeks.
It's 2 weeks.
I know. Since the Great War, where the humans were forced to leave Pandora, do we actually know how much time was between the war and the destroying of Home Tree? I imagine it must have been at least 1 month or something.
The destruction of Home Tree and the war, I want to say that was like less than a week.
Really? I believe it was.
We were shown a timeline from Quaritch's perspective of like, here's like one day, like within these number of days, these number of like Na'vi have gathered.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not long.
Mm, okay. I mean, okay, when it's in total like 3 weeks, that's a pretty short time. Okay, then it's more mm-hmm. understandable. But still, I mean, like the Na'vi, I always thought that they are so based in harmony and trying to find that again when it's being disturbed, and they being shown so resentful and I don't know, is this a, I don't
they
know.
Were shown quite resentful at the start of Avatar, and
yeah,
like
true.
the only I feel like the only reason we're left with that feeling about the Na'vi is because towards the end of the film there was this sense of unity against a common threat. But I mean, the one of the first shots we saw suggesting the Na'vi was arrows in the truck tires of those vehicles, like that was going on long before and would continue to happen well during and after.
True, but we've also seen that the Omatikaya can forgive and move on with Neytiri taking care of Jake and everything. I mean, of course, it was a couple of months and so on. I mean, they know that Jake is a human or was a human and what they did for them. So I don't know, it feels the emotional connection for me was difficult with this issue. I just say that. it was emotionally confusing a bit.
You're a human sympathizer, aren't you?
A spy.
And that's an awful thing in this community.
Yeah, she's with the RDA, oh god.
For reference, it was 3 days.
Oh,
August 20th was the destruction of Home Tree, and August 23rd was the beginning of the assault.
What? Okay.
You just watched the movie again, I see.
Yep. AKA, I looked at the timeline on the wiki.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you fastened forward the movie and looked at this timestamp of Jake's recording.
That's pretty much what happened, I think, for all of this.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine any other way that they would extrapolate that information.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, the 19th was the destruction of the Tree of Voices. So, like, all of that happened in the span of about 4 or 5 days.
Pandora days.
Yeah, true.
Actually, Earth days.
I mean, yeah, they use human months, right?
Yes, but I feel like a lot of also what was being referenced was day-night cycles on Pandora.
Yeah, so I basically don't know anything about that. How long is a day-night cycle, and how regular is it because of like the moon around the planet movement?
Right. I mean, from what I remember, it's highly irregular, which is part of the reason whenever people try to assign numeric time to the Na'vi, I'm like, I don't know how they would ever adopt this in any meaningful way. Like, the Na'vi's way of telling time exclusively in terms of like, oh, it's noon, or it's before or afternoon, it's morning, sunrise, sunset, and then night. Like, that's about as accurate as of terminology as you could get, and it's certainly all that really ever impacts them.
Actually fairly interesting. Maybe it's something from the science segment, figure out how this actually works from a science perspective.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the lecture.
Oh boy.
Awe, explain. Yes,
I know who's doing that.
Don't feel pressured. You can do that another time. Next episode is fine.
Yeah, I mean, I do expect slides.
I have a textbook everybody's going to have to purchase.
Extensive reading.
Yeah.
I hope we don't have to write essays.
Well, now. No.
Thanks for the idea. Speaking of space, the glorious return of space news is here, and I'm going to throw it over to Awe.
Yay! So one of the most exciting things in recent space history has happened. We landed another rover on Mars. We landed the Perseverance rover. Now,
yay!
As to why this is important, this has possibly some of the most influential science goals that we've had on a rover for a long time. So we know that Mars had liquid water at some point. Now, what we're trying to find is evidence of past microbial life. In fact, that's actually the main goal of Perseverance, is to study the geology, figure out how the geology of Mars formed, what caused it to form, because as far as we can tell, Mars is completely solid. Earth, we know, has a molten core. Mars does not appear to have one. In fact, it doesn't even have a magnetic field. That's why it doesn't have an atmosphere. We're also looking for good evidence of ancient life on the planet by looking for microbial signatures in this geology.
Yeah, doesn't this rover also contain a small flight drone?
Yeah, it also includes a small helicopter to test powered flight on another planet for the first time.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Yeah, that's interesting.
How does that work? It is like,
yeah,
it has batteries on board.
If there is no atmosphere, is that even possible?
There is atmosphere, it's just very thin.
Yeah, it's just very thin because most of the atmosphere is blasted off by solar wind. If we didn't have a magnetic field on Earth, most of our atmosphere would be blasted off by solar wind. That's one of the, I guess, challenges of possible terraformation of Mars, is we have to put a magnetic field in place. Otherwise, any atmosphere we create will just get blasted off.
Oh, that is actually an interesting theory. Because of the unobtainium and like the large magnetic fields on Pandora, maybe that's why they have this dense atmosphere.
Yeah, it's true. It's actually a very good possibility. But now, this is where the most exciting part of this rover comes in. Looking for life on another planet isn't even the most exciting part of this rover. We appreciate that for a minute.
That's subjective. First of all, that's highly subjective. Second of all, I'm intrigued. Continue.
The next science objective is to cache some of these geological samples, to pull them into the rover and hold them for future return to Earth, because the final science objective is to test technology to put humans on Mars by 2030.
Okay, I actually read about that, and I was kind of confused, because so apparently Perseverance indeed is going to dig some stuff up and then put it in something.
Mm-hmm.
But of course it has to be retrieved by some future robot, and then I'm like, why doesn't the future robot just dig it up instead of doing this in this weird like two-phase plan?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. What's so special about the samples that they're gathering?
Because I don't believe we're planning to have a robot come and pick it up.
So if a human's coming and picking it up, why can't they just shovel up their own samples?
Exactly.
Because resources are going to be limited for the first humans. Might as well do it ahead of time so that you can spend more of those resources performing even more science goals, such as testing technologies for life support, things like that.
Right, so it's like they basically don't want to put a shovel in the first rocket with humans, so they're like, let's already shovel it up right now so the humans can grab it.
Pretty much, yeah, and then it makes things easier for everyone. If we have something there that can do it, might as well just do it then instead of time crunch humans.
So you think the plan is not to have a next robot that is able to lift off of Mars again, but put actual humans on the planet?
That's actually a science objective.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but not, I mean, in 10 years, okay.
That's actually the science. The goal is to have, by the 2030s, to have the first humans land on Mars and be testing actual life support systems and using the data from Perseverance, because Perseverance is going to be looking at pretty much everything to do with landing on Mars and sustaining humans, such as creating oxygen and propellant using resources on Mars, trying to characterize the atmospheric dust particles, how the size and shape of these particles are, because you don't exactly want to be breathing in little shards of like volcanic glass or something.
Sounds bad.
Yeah, sounds painful.
I'll breathe the air on Mars. Got it.
Pretty much.
I was just gonna say they also besides this flying thingy, they also packed another utility to try to convert CO2 to oxygen on Mars. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
That's all already happening. Then, basically.
So it's a mini terraformer.
In a sense, it's testing it.
Perseverance is going to do it all by itself.
There's a reason it's called Perseverance. Another, it also has built-in weather detection systems. So it's going to be testing our atmospheric models of Mars and seeing how valid they are. Because you really want to know what the weather on Mars is looking like if you're going to try to land a spaceship on Mars, as anyone who's seen The Martian can attest to.
Yes, the historically accurate film.
It's historic, not exactly historically accurate, but it is very scientifically accurate.
Sort of just elaborating on that whole point, something that fascinates me about this landing and also the previous rover landing, which I also was like experiencing more or less live, which feels like it was yesterday, but it was not. It was like a decade ago.
Right.
The thing that fascinates me about doing anything on Mars is just how fundamentally different it is from doing, for example, like a moon landing. Because communication going even at the speed of light still takes, what, like 11, 12 minutes? Or is that the round trip time? Either way, like, the ping is ridiculous between planets.
Yeah, you got a little bit of communication lag happening.
Yeah, so, like, you can't troubleshoot or course correct in, like, real time. When these landers are being sent to Mars, they basically have to handle all the calculations and everything themselves. I can't imagine how you debug that kind of system. But I'm sure it involves a whole lot of science and math.
For the rovers aren't too bad, because what they do with the rovers is they actually just take them out into a desert.
Right. But still, like, the whole landing procedure is automated and, like, course corrects itself in real time.
Yeah.
Far away, because the people on Earth can't do that remotely. Like, the signal, by the time the signal got there, it would have already finished landing.
Yeah, that was also something that I was very fascinated by. By mere chance, I was I watched it live when the landing took place, and they tried to explain some of the stuff which I didn't get, but exactly that sometimes they would send a signal and sometimes they would just let the the rocket or the rover then do its thing. And I said, okay, that's a pretty big gamble.
Yeah, that's the fun part, is we don't have a choice.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But this was
also fascinating that even if in like NASA tested software, there's still fatal flaws.
Oh,
as a programmer, I find it very
You'll love this one then.
And sad.
You'll love this one then. There was one probe to Mars that crashed because somebody messed up the conversion between imperial and metric units.
Ouch. Yes, yes, ouch. Yes. I know about that one. Yeah. This is just an example in one of our courses. Yeah.
Yeah, still an example. So communication.
Yeah, but I mean, these are common, right? I mean, there's also a plane that I think almost crashed or crashed. No, wait, that was a plane that had to like glide basically unpowered to an airport for like 10 minutes or so because someone messed up the conversion between gallons and liters in the airplane fuel.
Whoops.
It's like, thanks. How does this happen? Apparently, it does.
Are they still working at NASA, the one who did that?
Well, I think, yeah.
They may no
that's,
longer
that's never
have...
going to go away on your resume.
Yeah, they may no longer have much of a grant, but...
it's like blame-free, like... Blame-free talking about mistakes is very important in these processes, right?
If
something goes wrong and you immediately get fired, that's really bad because if then the next person makes a mistake, they won't admit it because they will get fired. What you need is a process where people can safely talk about their mistakes, even if it like breaks a muscle over. I mean, of course, it's not really easy, but that would be the ideal situation.
But I mean, can you imagine the pressure? That's the thing, let alone that I couldn't do those mathematical equations and stuff, but the pressure of that is, and then I can totally understand the footage that you see of this, what's it called, the command center, or when they where they look at other stuff, that you see the elation on their faces and how happy they are that it worked.
Right.
And I can totally understand that. Yeah,
yeah, they almost look happier than, I mean, we when Paul leads a new blog post.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay.
I have the same reaction if I email Paul and I get an email back. It's the...
Okay.
It's like writing some code and then you get exactly one compile.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah, with no errors. when that happens,
no
I can play the lottery.
I do not trust this. It's impossible that this worked the first time.
Yeah, it's probably just not executing at all. Or I compiled the wrong code, or, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that's the problem. I just recompiled the operating system somehow. I don't even know. Didn't even know that was a thing I could do, but okay.
Matawe, what are your thoughts on whenever I see such footage of the, for example, the landing of that rover? Isn't it kind of strange to think that we are almost better equipped to land on another planet than going to the depth of our own oceans?
It sounds very strange, but it makes sense because it's kind of the inverse process. In order to explore the depths of our oceans, we have to withstand extreme pressures. Whereas in space, we have to withstand no pressure, which means we just pressurize the thing we're in. But it's very interesting. There's similar problems, but have to be solved in completely different ways. Because you have to make something that's not going to collapse. You don't want to turn into like a little pill at the bottom of the ocean because the submarine decided to collapse in on itself.
Yeah. So it goes both ways. I was, what is it? A few weeks ago, I was watching this documentary that James Cameron did, which is on, I think, Disney Plus and National Geographic, where they actually talk about what they learn from those deep dives is then applied to maybe manned space missions. So, but then you are describing it the other way around. So it's like a dual process, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you make something that can withstand extreme pressure from the outside, then chances are that's, you kind of want to start there to try to figure out how to withstand no pressure on the outside.
Yeah, okay.
And I know for the most part, training for things like spacewalks is done underwater using, I think they call it something like zero buoyancy or something like that, in order to allow you to feel what it's like to move in practically zero gravity without actually having to go to space to do it. That, and of course, the good old vomit comet.
I just find it interesting that we're talking about both space and the deep sea and the intersection of those two for the Avatar sequels. We looped it all back together. We did it.
Yep.
Yep.
We did it. I did want to make mention that one of the coolest things about this was if you watch the landing, it was another instance of the sky crane, which is what I believe put Curiosity down.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting because it's a lot more, I guess, elegant than we're just going to put it in a big inflatable bubble and just crash it in. It's a lot more... a lot more delicate. We can put a lot more into our rovers that is more delicate. That,
yeah.
Right.
Wouldn't be able to survive.
Is that what they did with early landers?
Yes. In fact, I think
amazing.
I think Opportunity might have been exactly that. Like, it was a bunch of airbags that they inflated, then it just bounced until it stopped, and then those deflated.
Wasn't there always also a problem with one of those landings where the fabric of the balloons stuck in one of the tires?
Yeah, and that caused some issues.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
In fact, I think that was Opportunity. Might have been Opportunity. I can't remember off the top of my head, but...
So, and the technology now is... what's it called? The space crane?
Sky crane, yeah.
Sky crane, okay.
The concept of they basically have a rocket holding the rover and it stays kind of stationary above the surface and then lowers the rover down much more slowly.
Ah, okay. So it's more controlled.
Yeah, and then once the wheels touch the ground, it detethers and then flies off to crash land somewhere else. Well.
Well. Yeah, it goes, my people need me, and goes flying into the...
And we actually have video footage of that, right? That's the cool thing for me about this landing in particular. We have like video for several, like from several camera angles that shows that. So I think the only thing we need now is like a live stream, and then we can get like live streaming from Mars. Mm-hmm. Next step in technology. That would be really exciting.
It'll only have a 20-minute delay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, that's just as live as it gets, right?
Pretty much.
But, I mean, the same thing, but at some point they put, like, live HD cameras on the space station, like, pointing down at Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can just go to, like, you know, Twitch and watch that live. I found that really cool because it gives you, like, a sense of, like, how do you call it? Urgency? It's, like, really the live thing you see from space.
Yeah, the perspective.
As soon as you get live... like video feeds from Mars, then I feel like maybe humans on Mars might be getting close.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta, it's the old adage of seeing is believing, but
yeah,
sometimes
definitely.
Seeing begets believing.
Do we have a satellite around Mars?
We have several satellites around Mars.
I'm pretty sure.
That's how we're actually able to communicate at all.
Okay. Oh, I'm so badly
one
informed.
Of.
Okay. The latest
of them...
one was Chinese, Kip, yeah?
No, that was the moon.
Oh, okay.
It's just the moon.
The moon is Chinese.
That was the moon mission that China did where they landed a rover on the dark side and they had to put a satellite in orbit. Otherwise, it wouldn't be able to communicate because it would have to communicate through the moon.
Mm-hmm. I got that wrong in my head. It's a mission that's about to happen in like 2-3 months.
They going to put one up? Oh, cool.
Putting another satellite in the orbit of Mars, I think it was. I'm not sure. I just heard it while watching the...
That sounds familiar. I skimmed through a wiki article of, like, history of missions to Mars on the day of the rover landing, and I remember seeing something to that effect.
Mm. Yeah, the Mars Recon Orbiter is actually one of the satellites we still have running up there. It's been there for a long time. Almost a decade and a half at this point. It's been there... only slightly longer than Avatar's been out.
Now you're speaking in a time frame I understand.
I have a question. How much time does it actually take for a spacecraft to go from Earth to Mars? Like, if we are thinking about settling on Mars by the 2030s, how long would the travel take, basically?
I believe the travel is on the order of months.
It's 6 to 7 months.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wanted to say or so months.
6 to 7 with our current technology.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's when it's closest, right?
I of course. Like, I mean, what are you going to do? Like, intercept the sun?
Well, here's the fun part.
Bad idea.
Sometimes you don't want to launch when it's closest.
So, yeah, you're launching where it will be, not where you have to lead the shot to Mars.
It wasn't even actually, it was past its closest approach when we launched Perseverance. Or I guess it was getting close to past. It was near its closest approach when we launched. The reason is because you want it to come in at a certain point. But like you said, yeah, you have to lead that shot. Yeah. You have to account for a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, a great game to play if you want to see how ridiculously difficult that is. Kerbal Space Program is always recommended.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it looks like it was about, yeah, it was 6 months, almost exactly.
Okay.
So it launched in August and landed in February.
So the people going up to Mars are going to spend like half a year in interplanetary space.
One way,
yeah.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, that's the one way.
Also, you thought a year of quarantine was bad.
Now do it in a tiny little tube.
Mm.
Obviously, the whole pandemic was just preparation for a generation of space travel.
how like, believable do you actually think that in the 2030s we'll get people on Mars? Because, I mean, as a relative outsider, I feel like that's a long shot. Well, literally, but also, you know.
I mean, if you want me to be honest... If we had kept up the same level of research and movement that we had during the space race of the 60s, we would have been on Mars in the 80s, for sure.
Hmm.
Just because we have the technology. The technology to land someone on Mars and then come back is not too different from the technology to land someone on the moon and back. We just ended up not really putting as much into the space program as we could have. But I think it's very possible to get it in the 2030s. I don't know whether it'll be NASA that does it first or whether Elon Musk will send a roadster to Mars first. We'll find out.
No, that's useful.
But
yeah, will it be a government space organization? Will it be a eccentric billionaire? We'll find out.
See you on the next episode in about a decade or so.
Look, our hiatuses aren't that long, Tawe.
No.
Well, I'm Atikamia. This is Iana Mokri, season 17, and...
I'm Welling Atikame. We're going to discuss on this episode all 4 Avatar sequels.
I was going to say, I'm sure at least the first sequel will be out by the time humans land on Mars. We'll find out.
This
was our episode. Sorry that it was 30 hours long, but I hope you enjoyed it anyway.
So we're here to discuss the extended collector's edition of Avatar 5 on Holosphere.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's even still a Blu-ray version available if you really only have Blu-ray player in your home.
Welcome to this episode of Ayana Mokri, where 3 of our hosts have transferred their consciousnesses to the internet itself.
And of course, as always, the Animal Quiz is also still available on vinyl because people still like it for some reason.
I can't imagine a podcast being pressed onto vinyl. That just seems like the most pretentious thing.
Do you know how badly I want to do that now? Like, I just want to get it. I just want to. I'm not even going to actually do it. I'm just going to get a regular record of some random thing and then just put a sticker that says Animal Quiz on it. Because I'm just hanging it up. Nobody will know.
Matawe.
Mm-hmm.
Danga.
Ge, kaukar.
Speaking of the Nafi language. There we go. We did it. Perfect segue.
Segue's on point segue. Today.
This is like, it's a C-grade segue, let's be honest. We're going to, as always, conclude our episodes with a little bit of Nafi language practice. A reminder that we are not perfect, but we are learning, and we hope that you are all learning along with us. Do we have a word of the cast or some sort of prompt? God help us, do we have a prompt?
Well, we could say, Kivke, Tiso, Fbeio.
No, because I can never stress that one correctly.
So Fbeio is actually stressed on the E, then?
Yes, it is.
Hmm.
That's the eye for us Americans.
Well, you're going off the sign. That's the thing, is like whenever I'm describing whenever I'm doing like a pronunciation lesson or something, I'm always like, okay, and I point to a letter and I'm like, okay, so the I here, and it's like, do they know that the thing I'm pointing to is the I sound, or like with the E or the I or whatever? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. Again, is it the letter? Is it the sound? It's always a challenge.
Yeah, if only it would have been Dutch or German, that would not have been any issue whatsoever. But yeah.
Yeah. If only I was born under completely different circumstances in a different part of the world.
Yes, exactly.
If I had a nickel for every time I've said that.
Like, linguistic side note of how these vowels changed in English is kind of ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
But we are going to not be practice sessions, so maybe we shouldn't go off topic again.
No, this is Leanna Mukri. It is on topic for us to be off topic.
Right, so it's like, I believe, in the 17th century. Like, before that, English had perfectly normal vowels. You would say, I guess, door. Like, door. Oh, door is the same. Never mind. You would say dea instead of dia. Yeah, that's a good example, right? And you would probably say, like, daar instead of der. Just like you would in Dutch. And I mean, many words are still the same if you do it like that in Dutch. But then for some reason, there was like a dialect shift. Nobody bothered to update the spelling, so now all the vowels are different.
Somebody looked at Latin and said, we want some of that, but we don't want to change shit.
Yeah, we don't want to actually change the spelling because the spelling looks cool, I guess.
Mm-hmm. But
the pronunciation, we're just going to randomly change.
Yeah, we're going to decide that these letters don't exist now. But we're going to keep spelling it that way, but we're just not going to say it.
I think it's going to indicate long vowels by putting an E behind the consonant, because it used to be that we actually pronounced that E. We don't pronounce it anymore, but now we still use it as the hint that the vowel is long.
Well, so for damn you, Q!
You're ranting again.
I bring out rant angry about Willem. He's good for ratings.
Angry, but
it's good for ratings.
It's not the Hulk, it's the Walk.
I was gonna say, we need the YouTube video, just have it slowly zooming in on his profile picture.
Mm-hmm. Add a screen shake of increasing intensity.
English is back!
So anyway, today's word of the cast is going to be Litvia, a noun for language. Sivako,
matapo. The better one I said sound.
Litvia, na pilusway.
Maya, pe Litvia, tsun nga pivot e.
Ah, tsun pivot e. Italiano eat se ne español ne eat
eat
fanumseng srang
srang ke he tun people Ne español da luna where cario pivot tafia.
Ne ye cario sra
srana
pefne cario petalatari
Terry, Tiftia, Kifkea, Wea.
And doch die Tensi. Ha.
Pefne, Tiftia. Loop.
Tiftia.
Fra Tiftia.
Fra Tiftia. Tiftia. Ahi.
Damn.
Spilwell footat rolam.
Fa. Han Adana Adan. Aye.
It's a lot of my way.
Siltan. The Luna. Oh, I can't slow down.
Srani. Enga lahe tut.
E hut elivain.
Pefne lifia. Enga slivam.
Ah, lifia. Srani. Lifia la Nederlandse, lifia allo Englese, gesempelt ein, oder lifia la Navi, gesempelt ein, lifia la Deutsche, nix ran, lifia la Franse, ne it,
damn,
lifia Nihon, ne it ne ding.
Steria nga zalefiat setzrak.
E pelifiat?
Nihone.
Ne it zis mesisitam se zisitam. Walzat ftolia sle set o efungong ne it ute. Svelivut o etzakemsi ne ul sle. Ses pintari ans fe tifketok tari fe tifketok talun kaluveru lun fu kanao ftifia tanker
wedi tanker keftolia salifia Mevola zisitam.
Mevola zisitam, tam. Ha set sola fra utstra?
Kehe, tsun ivinan uel salifia ni'i. Finela lu hiragana se katakana. Tsula it's a lot well paya kanji ti sle tsun tsun slivam well pami tsalefia ya
out of the tensi wari fat slam ai uti a paunult e lungesi
Kariu salifiaia weia kariu salifiaia siltsana boom lamu
siltsan
ningai spa wealth da ketsun oe tsuiva le upam Salifia.
E weri ke luveru ke akariu salifia ye sle ses pine fetifketo sre lamu tipenk o fra kintr u asuta lahe ulte niteng tolok tsatsengeti e mesute fu pesute asa u ftu atke alune hon ha tsao lamu lun a sirzan a numene ul talun afko neo bifelt en au fwe ai fohu sle set gesempelt et tsao ketsunslu ha mif getog tsa sa pongu e slef cosen e pifelt e fa internet e na ayo e gesempelt e sle gesempelt e tsao kalu o Niftan.
Sran. Sate efus mon veru. Kamanom wel puki tsalefiaia mezisitam ute kara kara wel sapuki in arminan slolam wel aya ut toluna ftolia wel lipiat lenapi.
En tot dit en zie.
Trane. Fnelle u. Lifia, ja. Soon will. Soon waits the vam. Ne ul ul.
I let uti lip helenavi fu. Le fiaie le nihon.
Le fia a aile u a sar sutel a ftia aile fiati.
Ah, strane, tulam.
Strane. Ke kau srefwa nul srefa ftolia wel le fiati le napi. Sail u kesmon weru kau I.
Strane. Fua ftia lit fiati lena vi lu sirzana fia o a ftia teri ai lit fia.
Strane, mutene wot.
Ha, ma ai lapo e ngatsu ai ngatsu pifelt e fa per Litvia. By Litvia, spiro.
Makis?
Eta. Wait soon, pivot in a toitje, Nilam. Sin English, sin a Navi, sin a Norsic. Norvitian.
Ah, Sran.
Niit. No.
Fteria nifkar, srak.
Rut elivein.
Fteria nifkar, srak.
Nifkar.
Sran.
Kismon war tsale u.
Nifkar.
Nifkar.
Slu lately in English, srak?
Sran.
Kehe. Ke ftolia tsale fiat, wollen wo wo Muna sit kam spiluel
ah dann
sle ke li ke zwolla frau mit so sie war auch nicht
Kosman
sran ke sle neu wel ftivia lefia alahe mi Sve mike omum pifnel. O kolan pifumi.
Fit ele mao kaum pivenk o ai we ai weng teri lifia neo ai weng nivume. That my plumps Pelifia Teria Ftolia
Piltewe Nilum Nitoitie Sin Inglises Ninavi Ufta. Starmolia? Starmolia, well, Lithiat Lengenge, alu Gaelic fu Irish Gwege.
Tam.
Eldur Detensi.
Selitvia le svenska neid. Neid. Og det med noen ting himje litfjeje le franse.
Spiller en fot av gaut og kjøtt som pifelt er ne franse, kjøtt.
Nei, nei.
Hekne i taluna graue pamrelti vel innan sunue slivamne it sle graue vel selifiat staum ke sunue slivam.
Wedding thing.
To slam. Trane. I suit in the France get soon piffled nifia o afkot soon sliva. Afko pamrasi. Und afkot soon ivina anut. Has trane. Slam. Und in sakr. I suit a capult I le upami. Afko pamrasi.
Ne eat nel nivume we well salifiat e taluna yune well pamseo di Africata ute satsing lu aya Aya pongu pivot ene France.
Nengai.
Ha lup aya aya pamseo ap ai ne France.
Ha ma pamarik pelifia ri na pilt e.
Ne al wedi wedi tsunoi pivot ne inglese se ne nafi now. Smon weru hola litfia vi le nihone le nihon gesmon
kiam omniten
kefket koto kefketok le uangai kefjak se ute smon weru hola litfiavi le spanyols se le france ningai ketsunoi pivot e nitsafia foots livam silifiat
tsuntivam
Soon Pamrel CV, ne Python, ne.
Strane. Smon weru lifia L2LF ngap alu C++,
se
assembly.
Sin ul.
Strane, se CSS.
Soner.
Stallone well nisok tepeng oti ateri a litfia L2L fnap lu litfia ngai fuke ha
srane
ja zu neu slivamza fit elet
Franke he spiloe taluna lungesik taluna fitte paum e lun ke lulau ke fiak e taluna e tsautare ne au e te paumit alu p Peulifia. Solamfrag.
Lithial na horenit se liuti se seralti.
Spau will safne lithia lu lufia o a fgol I sing asic di emzau.
Strane.
Gelu lifia angai? Is la. Lam fkoru na lifia. Is la. Safne lifia lu sna dinvi.
Sna dinvi.
Dinvi.
Zenewe fifa awa swa kip. Dinvi.
Willem.
Snatinvi.
Ah, srane. Lu fia'o a kim. Ke fia'k?
Srane. Fia'o a kim.
Ute, kese...
Ute, lu oi kimiu. Kimiu eltu elefnga.
Srane. Oe lu kimiu niteng. Ma eltu elefnga fikemsi.
Ute sali well people away kara kara pamrel seri
ute sakr antu la fnap pult esan ee sakr swelu get to know the game to be
the sakr people away ke sakemsi
sakr swelu o fko takem alu percussive maintenance si
taku kem
taku
foiso fa foi taku te sei ku so te tu sa kuke ke
balut
Now we have Diva Cook, where El Tutilef Nab, Gro. Sle Fra Kra, where El Tutilef Nab, the Casey, the Kr, Nifkatung Eye, Oe, the Caseoli.
Sran,
Depiva Cook.
Sran, Fra Kr, Oe, Mitzaf, me. Mitzatelen noluioe.
Strane. Fia o lu feu. Hab er auve? He, lu keie. Pehemleren, ketslamel kau i. Hab er a muve? Zene livu ngai. Fua el tu lefnga nolui fitzenget. Feu. Fit uzo weye I kim zo sle elfu lefngap dik esi ote sakr ha pea peve a kehe olus kaung
ne ngai
srane ute kera frau zo spawel futa frau kezo
kopninga
sao lenni teng srane Kan du forstå at Kim altu lefngap taluna altu lefngap lus numena kefja altu lefngap sa Kim si neau ngal Kim a fra Kim si neau
Srane ketsun altu lefngap fbivil neau Kim si Kem of gol olim See?
Kespow.
Kefyuk.
Ah, Frane. Litwa lukem, lukem li ukefyak.
Frane.
Ha, dik, dik im lu. Ah, dik im lu tole u. Ha, weye, weye, keyeri, nait oa.
Frazo, slolam uwe. Ute, frapo nerume.
Dik im si, dik im kim. No lu mai oe.
Say son it's on.
Oh.
And with that, we're going to wrap up the episode. Again, the next issue of the next Shadow comes out shortly. Hopefully by the time that you get this episode in your inboxes. Thank you for joining us. And I'm signing off. Hi, Olavai.
Hi, Olavai.
Hi, Olavai.
Zakurvako.
Hi, Olavai.
Balunga zene lahea. I li uti pifil te.
Rebel. Stewie, see you.
Mischievous as always, please.
What, me? No.